if the CDC would have had to award all of those and compensate all of those children with autism for even a fraction of a children with autism, it would have been hundreds of billions of dollars. Okay. It would have been an astronomical amount of money. And so I think they're highly motivated because of that legal issue. And they're highly motivated. Also, the pharmaceutical industries, they want to sell the MMR vaccine. It makes a lot of money. And so I think there's a lot of motivation, you know, for those two things. Continue to sell the MMR vaccine and stay out of vaccine court, because that is going to cause a lot of damages and it's going to cost a lot of money.
This podcast came to be because I want to reignite discussions about Pan-Africanism. And the purpose is to plant seeds of unity and inspiration among Africans, both at home and in the diaspora. I believe we have come to the stage where our continent is more vulnerable than ever, and it's up to us to decide our fate moving forward. What we will come to realize, I hope, is that we're so much more alike than we're different. And this show is just a small contribution to the public discourse that is going on in Africa right now. My name is Soshima Iro, and this is the Pan-African Experience. On today's episode, I'll be joined by Dr. Brian Hooker. Dr. Hooker is an assistant professor at Simpsons University in Redding, California. He is the principal consultant at Brian Hooker Consulting and the senior engineering consultant at Ares Consulting. Dr. Hooker is renowned for his research on autism and MMR vaccine. I am very grateful and honored to have Dr. Hooker on the show. Dr. Brian Hooker, welcome to the Pan-African Experience.
Well, thank you, Soshima. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you so much for inviting me to appear on your podcast.
No problem at all. You know, here in Aberdeen, a lot of African families have kids with autism. And
yes.
The purpose of this podcast is to address my concerns with regards to higher prevalence of autism among Black family. And this prevalence is often associated with MMR vaccine. Now, I don't know what the right answer is, you know. I just want to address these issues and see how we go from there. So,
okay.
Just wanted to say, are you against MMR vaccine?
I am concerned about the way that the MMR vaccine is given, and especially when the MMR vaccine is given to very, very young children.
Okay, so you were one of the key figures in the documentary Vaxxed, and you single-handedly published a paper that associated MMR vaccine with autism. You know, the paper is titled Measles, Mumps, Rubella Vaccination Timing and Autism Among Young African-American Boys, a Reanalysis of CDC Data. Now, this paper was published in 2014 in a peer-reviewed journal, and however, it was later retracted by the publication. And just read the publication's response to this just before we continue. Just say, you know, the editors of the Translational Neurodegeneration, you know, that's the journal, they decided to retract the article because, and I quote, "There were undeclared competing interests on the part of the author, which compromised the peer review process. Furthermore, post-publication peer review raised concerns about the validity of the methods and statistical analysis. Therefore, the editors no longer have confidence in the soundness of the findings. We apologize to all affected parties for the inconvenience caused," end quote. So do you still believe in this study?
Yes, I do. I stand behind my study and I'm, you know, I'm always ready to defend my own research. And in fact, I did republish that study in a different journal, probably a lower tier journal that's not indexed on the National Library of Medicine, called the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons. That was republished in 2018. I wanted to have that information republished. In fact, the analysis in 2018 was a more of an expanded analysis. So I included more data and more results that I didn't in the original 2014 paper. But yes, a long answer to your short question, I do stand behind my original results.
Okay, so please, can you summarize your study, please? You know, the access to the raw data, your methodology, and the findings from your study.
Well, the access to the raw data, I actually went directly to the Centers for Disease Control and asked them specifically for the de-identified data from one of their studies. The study was published in 2004, and it was, the first author was Frank DiStefano. Another author was Dr. William Thompson, who then became a CDC whistleblower regarding that particular publication and confessed to me directly that they had committed fraud in that publication. So my aim, through the help of Dr. Thompson, I was able to just go through standard procedures and get the data directly from the CDC through what's called a public use data agreement. And so the CDC and I agreed, I get the data set, and I started to analyze the data in early 2014. I received the data in December of 2013, and I proceeded to use the same methodology that the CDC used back in their original paper in 2004. I wanted to use the same methodology. The only thing that I did differently was that I included analyses that the CDC disregarded. Okay, so the CDC never looked at the entire sampling of African Americans and African American males when they were looking at the timing of the MMR vaccine and autism. They only looked at African Americans who had, this study was centered in Georgia, they only looked at African Americans that had a valid state of Georgia birth certificate. And that made the sample size much smaller. That made the statistical relationship that I reported on go away. But in my analysis, I chose to include all of the African males and females that were originally included within the study. Okay, the study was in Georgia. It was specifically in metropolitan Atlanta. And I believe that the percentage of African Americans in the study was close to 30%. So there was a significant number of African Americans, and I wanted to include all of them. I didn't see any reason to exclude anybody based on their state of birth. And when I did that analysis, I got something that was statistically significant that showed that African American males that got the MMR on time were three times as likely to get an autism diagnosis than those that delayed the MMR until after 36 months of age. Okay, so that's, in a nutshell, answering your question, I did get the data legally. I used the same methods that the CDC published in order to analyze my data. And I got really the same results, but I included information that they deleted from their original paper.
Okay, so according to the whistleblower, William Thompson, that's the CDC whistleblower. So do you,
that's correct.
Yeah. So do you also consider yourself a whistleblower?
No, I'm not really a whistleblower. I do publicize this type of information, and I've been involved in investigating CDC publications for almost 20 years now. But I don't really consider he is the whistleblower in who was within the CDC. I've never worked for the CDC. He reached out to me and sought guidance on how to best make public that the CDC committed fraud.
Okay, so the CDC, that's the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in America. That's a government agency in America. So
that is correct.
So CDC, in your opinion, omitted this aspect of the data, this key information. They omitted it, or was it an oversight, or you believe that it was an intentional omission?
From what I heard directly from the whistleblower, it was an intentional omission. The whistleblower, William Thompson, was in charge of all of the analysis for the original study back in 2000, you know, the early 2000s. And he originally obtained the result regarding African Americans and African American boys in November of 2001. Then Dr. Thompson went on to tell me that because of a senior author on the paper directed them then in September 2002 to destroy all results that showed a significant relationship between MMR timing and African Americans. It was my result was more African American males, but they destroyed all the data regarding African American males and African American females, as well as them aggregated together. And so they ended up intentionally destroying this information in September of 2002. And this was relayed to me directly by the whistleblower.
Okay, so a key element of your finding, of your study, is the age of exposure. That's the key element.
That is correct.
So if for Black children, especially Black boys, if they were given MMR vaccine before the age of 3, that's 36 months, they're more likely to, you know, you said 3 times more likely to have autism. Correct?
That is correct. Based on my finding, based on the CDC data, yes, absolutely.
Okay. So from what I've gathered so far, at the time of the publication of this study, CDC still has not conducted a research on vaccinated versus unvaccinated kids with regards to autism study.
No, the CDC has not. Number one, they have not readdressed the issue with autism and the MMR vaccine in African Americans, and they have not done a study of vaccinated versus unvaccinated children. They've done neither study. And, you know, my hope was that at least, you know, my results in my paper would cause the CDC to reopen this issue, but they have not done either. They have not looked at either type of study.
Okay, so have anyone tried to sue you, or CDC tried to sue you, or tried to, apart from tarnishing your image, or, you know, have anyone tried to legally sue you?
I have not been defendant in any type of civil lawsuit or criminal lawsuit. I have not, you know, the CDC has, they've shared data in some aspects. They've stopped sharing data with me since they released that study, but there has been no legal action against me.
Okay, so have you considered suing CDC? Have you considered
that? Well, that's very interesting. It's very difficult to sue a government agency, especially in the United States. It's sort of like beating against the wind. And so it would be difficult to say, you know, who do I sue? What type of standing do I have in court? And, you know, how would I proceed with such a legal lawsuit? Now, I'm not African-American. I don't have an African-American. I do have a child with autism, but I don't have an African-American child with autism. However, I do know individuals in that situation that perhaps could sue the CDC. But I've looked at this issue, and in my estimation, when I talk to legal counsel, nobody thinks I would win. You know, the standard message from the CDC that has been held up in court several times is that they say that vaccines do not cause autism. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Okay. They say that vaccines do not cause autism. And so when I take my case to court, the judge and the jury will probably side with the CDC.
Okay, just to go back to your studies again. So I'm just trying to understand, what is it in the MMR vaccine that is causing this autism? Do we know that?
You know, I really wish I knew. I've agonized over this, And I've been very concerned specifically why African Americans and why specifically African American males. I do know there was a study that came out of the Mayo Clinic that showed that when African Americans received the MMR vaccine, they tended to produce more antibodies to rubella. You know, MMR is measles, mumps, rubella. So African Americans produced about three times as many antibodies to rubella as compared to Caucasians. And so they are hyperimmune to rubella. So, you know, that gives us some type of clue. Sometimes hyperimmunity can lead to autoimmunity, and autoimmunity is definitely involved in autism. My son has an autoimmune condition as an autistic, and many autistics do have some type of autoimmunity comorbidity. So, you know, beyond that, I wish that we could study this. I wish that the CDC would have been honest back in 2004, and then we could understand what's going on with the MMR and why is it interacting with this physiology. But, you know, other than that, I'm just guessing.
Okay, so, I mean, what do you say to people that often criticize you, that you do not have a biology background or a medicine background to be able to, ascertain the credibility to do such research?
Well, I do have a biology background. My education is in biochemical engineering, and I am currently professor of biology at a small university in Northern California. And I published in biological sciences. I published over 65 peer-reviewed publications. You know, that's a modest number of publications because of the nature of my career. I've worked in the biotechnology field for 35 years now, and so I consider myself a biologist. Am I a medical doctor? No. No, I'm not a medical doctor, but many PhD researchers do medical research. So I don't think that sidelines me from being able to do this type of research, especially with my background in biology.
So people always talk about the influence of the pharmaceutical industry, especially in America. You know, so what do you think, obviously I'm asking you to make an assumption here, what do you think will be their motivation? Because if CDC is refusing to, you know, reassess this data and do further research on this data, obviously they want to continue the vaccination program, I will assume. So what do you think is the motivation here?
I think that the motivation is primarily if they have an admission that there's a problem with the MMR, two things will happen. Less people will get vaccinated with the MMR vaccine, people will avoid it. You know, that happened in 1998 with Dr. Andy Wakefield's paper, when he didn't even connect them. He suggested that autistic regression happened after the MMR vaccine. And so I think CDC would be very worried that people would stop giving that vaccine. And I also believe that they would be very concerned that they would be culpable for many, many vaccine injuries leading to autism. In the United States, we have what's called Vaccine Court, which is the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. It's, you know, you can't sue a vaccine manufacturer for a vaccine injury, so you go to this government program. And that program during the early 2000s was flooded with 5,000 autism cases. Okay, there were 5,000 autism cases, and it was very, very large compared to the normal volume of cases that go through that program. If the CDC would have had to award all of those and compensate all of those children with autism, or even a fraction of the children with autism, it would have been hundreds of billions of dollars. Okay, it would have been an astronomical amount of money. And so I think they're highly motivated because of that legal issue, and they're highly motivated also the pharmaceutical industries, they want to sell the MMR vaccine. It makes a lot of money. And so I think there's a lot of motivation, you know, for those two things. Continue to sell the MMR vaccine and stay out of vaccine court, because that is going to cause a lot of damages and it's going to cost a lot of money.
Okay, so is there other elements of your finding that I should be people should be aware of as well, if you can elaborate on that?
Absolutely. The findings go beyond African-American males. Okay, so there were, in the original study that was retracted back in 2014, the main thrust of the paper was the effect on African-American males. And it showed very directly that delaying after 3 years was reducing the incidence of autism. Later on, I also looked at children who were diagnosed with what's called regressive autism. And it turns out that all race categories, they looked at Caucasians, they looked at African-Americans, and then they looked at other race categories as well. But all race categories, when you looked at what's called regressive autism, where children are developing normally and then suddenly they regress, all of those cases, there was an increased risk if they got the MMR vaccine on time, okay? And the increased risk was primarily in boys, but it was a very, very strong signal, similar to the signal that we saw in African-Americans. So, obviously I was most concerned and the statistical relationship was most clear about the African-American effect, but there's also an effect with other races when you look at what's called regressive autism.
Okay, so regressive autism, is that different from isolated autism, or is that completely different?
Isolated autism is autism without any other types of comorbidities, okay? So regressive autism and isolated autism, it's been a while since I've looked at these papers, but regressive autism and isolated autism were essentially the same thing, okay? So they weren't, it wasn't somebody who was born with cerebral palsy and autism, or Down syndrome and autism. It's somebody who actually, they were isolated. The only diagnosis that they really had was autism.
Okay, and the impact of this MMR vaccine usually occurs more when the full three doses are completed.
Well, I would be concerned in the United States. There are, you know, first of all, there are three live viruses in that vaccine. So measles, mumps, and rubella, all live viruses. And so that's a real tax on the system, okay? Giving all of those virus particles at the same time. And then in addition, the vaccine is given again when a child turns 4 years of age. Okay, so, and I've heard other cases when you give the MMR on time, and then when you give the MMR 4 years of age, that children with autism will regress even further, okay? That it will actually, it could actually cause more damage. And it makes sense, because if it caused damage the first time, then you would expect, you know, this individual is susceptible, so it will cause damage the second time. So, you know, I'm very concerned about that. I don't comment, I don't tell people how to vaccinate, because I am not a medical doctor. So, but I encourage people, look at the science, look at my science, even what was retracted, I still stand by it, and make the decision for yourself.
Okay, there has been, comments about single dose, or, you know, to entertain the idea of having a single dose. Is that something that you agree with?
I don't know if there's enough research to understand single dose measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines. Historically, these vaccines have always been given together. Okay. So we have no precedent of what would happen if you gave a single measles, single mumps, single rubella, even if you spread it out. So there, is that a better idea? maybe, but we don't really have the data because, you know, first it used to be that they would vaccinate for measles and rubella, and then they vaccinated for measles and mumps in the same vaccine. And then in 1978, then they put them all three together. So they've never, we don't have a history when the vaccines were really separated. When the mumps vaccine came out, it was put together with measles, and then ultimately they were all put together. So there's just not enough data for me to make a conclusion.
Okay, so there is a law that is passed in the United States to, you know, absolve pharmaceutical companies of any liability with regards to this vaccine. Is that the case? And can you elaborate on this law and how it has impacted, you know, research and things like that?
That's a really good point. There is a liability shield that came from a law that was passed in 1986. It's the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, and that was passed under the Reagan administration. And that created the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program and then made it illegal to sue a pharmaceutical or a vaccine manufacturer essentially, and instead, you know, directed you into this government program that would compensate you. The government program is funded by a tax on vaccines. There's like a 75-cent tax on every vaccination. And so that's how the program is funded. So when somebody, you know, when the court decides, yes, you've had a vaccine injury, yes, you have a valid claim, then it comes from that fund. But pharmaceutical manufacturers don't pay anything, okay? They are not liable unless you can prove that the pharmaceutical company has committed fraud, then you cannot sue them.
This is very wrong because in all aspects of life, you know, if there's element of fraud or there's element of doing something wrong, people are always hold to account. So I'm not quite sure why they will be absolved of any responsibility. That does not make sense. The more they are absolved of responsibility on their medicine, the more people will be skeptical to, you know, take that medicine or engage with it, because if you're 100% certain that the product you're pushing works, then you should be able to say, you know, money back guarantee, or if there's any issue, just come to me. So that makes it even more suspicious as well. Go ahead.
You're preaching to the choir. I agree wholeheartedly that the problem with vaccine cord is it removes the manufacturer no longer has to be that concerned about vaccine safety. They're concerned about efficacy, but if there is a vaccine injury, then the vaccine manufacturer is off the hook. They don't, you know, they are not responsible for anything. So there is no impetus for the pharmaceutical companies to make vaccines safer. And that's really all I want. You know, when I talk, when I represent myself, when I represent Children's Health Defense, where, you know, I work as the chief scientific officer, that's what we want. We want things to be safer, and we want to avoid vaccine injury. However, without that impetus, the vaccine manufacturers are not creating safer vaccines. And we're even seeing that with the COVID-19 vaccine, which has had a horrible safety record.
Okay, so how has this impacted your life? You know, your studies, being labeled as the, you know, the mad scientist, so to speak, you know, how has this, you know, impacted your life?
Well, I work for a university that is very supportive. I do not represent their views on vaccines, and I'm very careful that I don't represent them. You know, I represent myself personally, but they allow me to do research. And even though that publication was retracted, you know, I went and I met with the university provost, told her what was going on. The university supported me through that process. And So, but that is not the case for most researchers. Many researchers, when their papers are retracted, they lose funding, they lose promotions, they can be terminated or fired. And that's happened to, you know, several of my colleagues in the research field. So, you know, for me, it hasn't changed that much because I have a supportive institution. And also, you know, I work, I have a dual role at Children's Health Defense. I continue to do research. But the thing that is difficult and is frustrating is that it's very hard to get my research published. If you publish something, or if your results cast doubt on the safety of vaccines, which a lot of my results do, then it's very difficult to get that research published. So, you know, finding a journal, you know, when I try to publish my research, I might have to apply to 6 or 7 journals to find one that will actually consider my work. Most will not even review it. So that is a difficulty. It's difficult to find journals that will publish things that go against the CDC, that go against the pharmaceutical industry, and it's a shame. All research should be judged by its merits and not by its message. You know, it needs to be judged specifically by the merits and then let the chips fall where they may. And that's been the biggest difficulty for me.
Okay, so you also published another paper in May 2020 with Neil Miller.
Yes.
You know, the paper is titled Analysis of Health Outcomes in Vaccinated and Unvaccinated Children, you know, developmental delays, asthma, ear infection, and gastrointestinal disorders. Is there any correlation with this paper and the 2014 paper?
Well, the 2014 paper was specific to the one vaccine, the MMR vaccine. The 2020 paper that I published with Neil Miller is considered all vaccines and considered only vaccines in the first year of life. Okay, so in some ways that correlated. You know, we looked at children who were vaccinated early. And if they weren't vaccinated in their first year of life, then for that, for all intents and purposes in that study, we considered them unvaccinated, okay? We did see, you know, similar, we did not have a large enough sample size to look at autism, but we did consider developmental delays, and we saw a strong relationship between children who were vaccinated in their first year of life and developmental delays. So in fact, those that were unvaccinated were 50% less likely to be diagnosed with a developmental delay. Okay, so the vaccinated had 2 times developmental delays than the unvaccinated. So that was a similarity between the two papers.
Okay, so would you say, obviously, like you said, you're not going to give any parents any advice, you know, whether to vaccinate or not to vaccinate, but in your opinion, the risk is higher for vaccination than unvaccinated? I mean, the risk of a child that is unvaccinated will be the risk of getting a measles.
Yes.
Right? And measles, as far as I'm aware, is not that fatal. It can be treated quite easily.
That is correct.
So.
Yeah, that is correct. So the measles, even back in 1963, before the measles vaccine, the mortality rate for measles was very low. It was about, the mortality rate was 2 deaths per 10,000 cases, okay? Per 10,000 cases of measles. So there was a very, very slight risk of death. The MMR vaccine carries a risk of anaphylaxis. It does carry a risk of encephalopathy and febrile seizures. You know, children can get seizures after the vaccine. And so I am very concerned about that. And I, you know, to me, when I look at the overall health of the unvaccinated, the benefits of vaccination do not outweigh the risks, Okay, so I am very concerned about that. Will I tell children not to get vaccinated? No, absolutely not. It's not my job, not my role. But I do have some concerns, and I want scientific, you know, other scientists, including the CDC, to look at the vaccination schedule, you know, look at the health of vaccinated versus unvaccinated, and open up this field of study. There have even been government agencies and independent agencies who have said they need to study the unvaccinated and see if they're healthier or if they're sicker. And this happened, the Institute of Medicine in the United States called for these studies back in 2013. And so, you know, I started publishing this. I published one paper in 2020, recently published another paper in 2021. Of vaccinated versus unvaccinated, but I'd like to see this research area open up and other researchers look at this as well.
Okay, so what do you say in a scenario whereby two black boys get this MMR vaccine and one develops autism and one didn't?
I think that there, you know, what I found was that that individuals that got it on time were three times more likely. It's not that every child who gets the MMR on time will get autism. I think that there are susceptibility factors. There are genetic differences. There are other issues, you know, whether the child is sick when they get vaccinated, whether they've been on antibiotics or have recurrent ear infections, how, you know, what was their prenatal history? So I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of genetic differences, and there's other differences in medical history where one child will get the vaccine and be fine, and the other child will get the vaccine and have autism. You know, in my son's case, he was vaccinated when he had an active ear infection. He was also genetically set up. We know that now because we've seen his genetics. And so he was the child that got autism, but it's not gonna happen to everybody.
Okay, so most of the studies, there have been studies that has been published to disprove your study, correct?
To my knowledge, nobody has specifically addressed the issue with African-American children, okay? So nobody has redone that particular study. They do claim that the MMR is safe, and there was one study that came out of Denmark about the MMR vaccine and autism that, you know, to me, it was fatally flawed, you know, had flaws to it. But the scientifically, this issue has not been revisited. And the CDC's attitude is cases closed, vaccines don't cause autism.
Okay, so when the Translational Neurodegeneration Journal, when they said the concerns with validity of methods and statistical analysis, what do they mean by that? Do you know what was their concern? Did they tell you?
They related to me a one paragraph peer review. Okay, it was very short, one paragraph, and it said that they did not understand my methodology and they did not elaborate. I didn't, you know, I don't know what they didn't understand about my methodology. And then the second thing that they said was, I did not confirm my result with multiple data sets. Okay. What they wanted me to do was confirm the result with the data set from the CDC and then go find another data set and confirm the result there. But honestly, nobody does that in epidemiology. Nobody does, you know, it is very, very common and usually the rule and not the exception that you confirm your data and you have your data set and that's really all you need to do to publish. Okay, so that's all I received. I submitted a 10-page rebuttal. Okay, so I had a 10-page rebuttal to their one paragraph peer review. And I was then told that they were going to retract the paper anyway. So they never addressed my rebuttal. This was in October of 2014. And in early in that month, and they got the rebuttal. They said, look, you know, we're going to retract your paper. end of story, and I did not hear from them again.
Okay, do you believe that CDC has had this situation of a corporate hijack? Do you think CDC has been hijacked?
I think that's a good way to call it. You know, we refer to it as agency capture.
Okay.
Where the pharmaceutical industry, you know, hijack, capture, whatever you want to say. The CDC is heavily invested in the pharmaceutical industry, and the CDC buys about $4 billion worth of vaccines every year. Okay. So they buy the vaccines and then they redistribute the vaccines. And then they are, you know, part of their metric is then how many take the vaccines. Okay. So if the vaccination program fails, then CDC revenues go down. Okay. They get less money from the government to buy vaccines. Okay. So they are conflicted in, they're conflicted agency. So, given that $4 billion comes from the pharmaceutical industry, and then also they have what's called the CDC Foundation, and through the CDC Foundation, they get about another $100 million from industry as well. Okay. So, you know, and I've seen correspondences between the CDC and the pharmaceutical industry, between the CDC and researchers who are related to the pharmaceutical industry. And it's a very close relationship. It's too close, and there are too many connections for CDC to be independent. You know, they are wholly dependent on the vaccine manufacturers for their livelihood, and that's how they operate.
Okay, so are you planning on doing any research or publishing any other paper on this topic? Or have you, because this type of scenario, you know, in most cases, you will face tremendous amount of pressure that you've already faced so far, and you continue to face pressure. So you will end up censoring yourself, whereby you wouldn't want to do certain research anymore, just to be accepted in your community.
I'm in a very, very good position to continue to do this research. I am not deterred by the censorship. Fortunately, I've been able to find areas where I can publish my papers. And so that's very encouraging to me. I'm 58 years old. I'm not retiring anytime soon. So, I continue to do this research. I'm continuing to make discoveries through large databases, through different data. I'm looking at individual vaccines as well as the vaccination schedule. And so, long answer for your short question, yes, I do continue. I do want to continue to publish, at least until I retire.
You see, what I don't understand is, the idea of science is to be able to rigorous checks and balances on any idea, not to silence it. You know, if you publish a paper and someone think what you said is wrong, they have to come up with a rebuttal or come up with another paper to say, okay, chapter by chapter, this is where you went wrong. That's supposed to be how science works, not to say, you know what, you got it wrong and we're not going to discuss it, end of story.
Right.
So that regresses the idea of science. There's no progress. There's no challenge. We're not challenging each other. There has to be one narrative. And we can see that in the COVID scenario, which I don't want to go into. But, you know, isn't that a concern for you and in the science community in general?
Well, science is very, it's like a observer. And it is not, science is not a religion. I see people say, oh, I believe in science. I'm like, well, you don't have to believe in science. Science goes forward regardless of whether you believe in it or not. And then I see also people saying, well, don't question the science. Well, science advances by asking questions. Okay, the reason that we can make scientific advances is because we ask difficult questions. When individuals get the COVID-19 vaccine, and I'm not going to go there, but we need to ask the question, what is it doing to their body? What is happening? Has this been adequately studied? And so I think, you know, we improve as a society and we do better in medicine if we continue to ask the hard questions. I wholly support, I love what you just said. You know, shutting down debate, internet fact checkers, you know, these are the things that will, you know, that curtail science. And instead we need to have openness and we need to be able to continue to ask hard questions.
Yeah, because I always tell my friends, you know, because something is packaged and put in the shelf in the store, doesn't mean it's good for the body. And that applies to medicine as well. In the UK, back in the day, they had what they called the thalidomide children. I don't know if you're aware of this.
The thalidomides, yes,
where there's deformity from a medicine where pregnant women, when they take a thalidomide. So, you know, from what I can remember, from what I read, you know, at the time, it was not believed until much, you know, several years later, and then it became fact. You know, but right. So nothing is, you know, science shows the truth, but science can also make mistakes. You know, there can also be mistakes in science or fraud in science. You know, sometimes when you do research, even in my own, if I do research for my MSc, I have to check also where the journal was published. You know, was it peer reviewed? Who sponsored the research? There are several layers behind the research that will make it authentic or not authentic. You know, so, but the idea of censoring someone is something I will always defend, you know, I don't care, but the idea is to have a debate and I will always encourage exactly. That debate. I was wondering, is there anything else you would like to expand on this study, please, that maybe I didn't get to ask you about that you would like to expand on, please? You have...
No, I appreciate so much what you just said, and I believe that we need to have honest debate over vaccinations. We need to have an honest debate over children with developmental delays, because that is an epidemic. There are, you know, that in the United States, 1 in 6 children has been diagnosed with some type of developmental delay. And it was not like that 20 years ago. It was not like that 40 years ago. And so we need to ask ourselves, what is happening? You know, is it the expanding vaccination schedule? Children get way more vaccines than they used to, you know, upwards to 21 vaccines by their first birthday. And so that's in the using the United States schedule. So I think we need to ask hard questions. A lot of times, individuals will, you know, from the pharmaceutical side will say, well, you know, you should be disqualified because you have a vaccine injured son or you have an autistic son. And, but everybody has their biases. You know, I deal with my own bias and I need to recognize my bias when I do research. The pharmaceutical industry needs to do the same thing. So we all need to realize and recognize our biases. I come from a different perspective. Something that you just said, Soshima, is that, you know, when you get a research paper, you should look at the background of the researchers. You should look at what institution it comes from. That's very important. Even in my case, I have a different perspective. Is my perspective invalid? No, it's absolutely valid, but you should look at, you know, where people come from, what is their potential conflicts of interest, and that needs to be taken into account. I will continue to do research, and I appreciate, you know, the encouragement, even in this show and in this interview, that we want to make sure that the science advances, that we're asking the right questions, that we're not censoring, that we're able to expose fraud. And I appreciate the interview so much. We've touched on so many of those issues today. And so thank you very much.
Okay, Dr. Brian Hooker, thank you very much for coming on the show. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Pan-African Experience. Join us on Facebook at The Pan-African Experience. Follow us on Twitter, TPA Experience, and follow us on Instagram, The Pan-African Experience. visit our website at www.thepanafricanexperience.com.